Thank you, Julie. Okay, so my talk is entitled, Recreating Old and Horrible Slow Sounds from the 80s. Now, my clicker doesn't... Have you frozen my screen? There you go. The web, I'm one of those kind of hippie people, is an amazing place. Today, we have seen talks on machine learning in the browser, the web animation stuff, the new JavaScript that's just around the corner. We've got virtual DOMs that make so much perf. We've got WASMs and PWAS. Is that me or you? There you go. Okay. And there's tons of content on making our websites accessible and usable so that people can come into our websites and use it. And service workers, I'll switch to Jake Archibald's official logo for service worker. Service worker, which Google at Google I.O. Said that it's one of the biggest steps forward in the last 10 years, opens up offline for websites and push notifications. It's amazing technology that we have it inside of the browser. It's an exciting time to be working with the web. And then we've got all the articles to tell us how to make faster websites and social media telling us that we can be better and make our websites more accessible and more performant. And we have blogs, Medium and LinkedIn. We can learn all these things. And there's so much content telling us that we should be better and it is exhausting. It's exhausting. I want to go back to a time that was simpler, where everything was just smaller and simpler and crappier. So we're going to go back to the old school, the way that I did it, and probably Charlie did it as well. I'm secretly old. I hide it well. So we're going to go back in time and look at the way that we can make stuff. But before I do proceed, I have some content warnings. The first one is there is some flashing imagery on the screen. You'll see this icon up in the corner when that happens. There is some disorientating sounds, which Julie kind of alluded to. You'll see this icon in the corner as well. I would try and manage the speaker because it is kind of loud. And there is also some questionable JavaScript, which you can judge who you want. It doesn't actually make it any better. So, this is me, obviously a child of the 80s, obviously dressed as Mr. T here. You can tell by the beard and the earrings. And I was privileged enough to be brought up in the 80s at the kind of booming time of technology and home computing. And lucky enough that my dad was into computers. He worked for a bank and he somehow brought home computers. And we had one of these in our household. So this is, in fact, we had the precursors, but this is a ZX 48K, whatever, a ZX Spectrum. And this is the real advert for this computer. So it shows us £120. The precursors to this was the ZX80 and the ZX81. The ZX80 was a home computer that was launched in the UK for £70, which is about £180 in today's money. Now, if you imagine for a second, the 70s had just finished. Those of you who were around alive in the 70s. But imagine there were rooms completely filled with computers. That's how computers worked. And all of a sudden, in the early 80s, you could take a machine this size, plug it into your television, and you could use programs and write programs and play games. And in fact, I don't have it with me, but the manual that came with the Spectrum, it wasn't actually a manual on how to use the Spectrum, it was a manual on how to program. They actually gave you a book, a full book, on how to program, how to make sound, how to do graphics, and how to understand hex and assembly. It's a beautiful piece of art. Now, the way this would work is you would take this thing. This is a cassette tape. For those of you a little bit younger, this is like a crap USB stick. Okay? Not robust at all. And it's a magnetic medium. And Charlie talking about the telegraph, like the bip, bip, bip. This is pretty much the same thing. All the sound would be on this tape. So if you've ever heard a fax machine going or listened to a modem, that's what you would hear on this tape. So you'd take your tape, you stick it into a tape player. A tape player will be mic'd, like jacked into your spectrum, and it would load the game. It would listen to the game loading, and you'd wait quite a long time, and then the game would load, some of the time. The thing about tapes, they do unspool sometimes. Sometimes they turn into this beautiful Jimi Hendrix. Other times it does not. You have to go find a biro, like spin it around until it goes all the way back again, and you start again. And I actually did a non-scientific canvas of Twitter for anyone who had one of these machines at home. And I said, for me, the only way I could get my games to load is I would literally sit there going, please load, please load, please load. And I would repeat that over and over until it worked, similar to a lot of websites these days. But other people, someone told me they would take their tape player and turn it upside down. Someone else told me that none of their siblings could be in the room at the same time. That's the only way it would load. So it's a bit like computing, where like a lot of random things happen and eventually it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I just want to share the experience of loading a game in a spectrum. So this is what I grew up with. I've got the sound muted at the moment. I'll slowly put it up. It's a good thing you can't see the icon that I warned you about up in the top corner there. It's there. There's the monkey with the ears. So there is some noise. Right, so if I play this, sure, click, load, empty question mark is spectrums. Okay. Yeah, there's people kind of being sent back in time there. So that is just to say there's something coming. This is a pilot tone to say we've got data coming. We've got bytes. Okay, so this is a completely normal sound for anyone here in like their 30s or 40s or over. And for anyone younger, just like, and that noise, this is in real time. That noise, that is just loading the screen. That's not the game. And you're 8 years old and you're going, okay, this could break at any point. I've got to keep going. Please load, please load, please load. That's just the screen. And you're like, good, I've got the right tape in there. So I thought it'd be a good idea to remake that. And in fact, oh Christ, it's still going. Stop, stop. Yeah, shh. Okay, so I thought it'd be a good idea to remake this. And in fact, anyone who did come to the conference last year, the aim was to have this ready for that year. And that's how you were going to buy the tickets. It would load. And it took me 12 months to build. So it took slightly longer than I thought it would do. So the first thing I want to do is recreate the sound, because it sounds like one of the key parts. Anyone who had a spectrum at home as a child knows that sound. Okay, so the sound is kind of broken up into three parts. You've got that steady tone that you heard. That's the pilot tone, so that's the one at the top. You have a thing called a sync signal, which is like a little blip, blip, blip kind of noise. And then you've got the actual sound of the data loading. Excuse me. Now, I know that the web has some audio APIs, so I can make use of these. So I'm going to get my web audio context, and I create an oscillator wave. So it's just like a waveform, and I'm going to set the frequency to 830 because someone sent me a tweet saying that sounds like 830 megahertz. So I made it 830 megahertz. I connect it to the context destination, which is my speakers, obviously, and I hit start. So you then get that noise, which compared to the rest of it is the easy part. And it didn't even sound right anyway. The next part is, for me, a lot harder because I have to programmatically make this sound. I can't just chuck white noise into an audio buffer, random data into an audio buffer, because it just makes white noise. I need to make it sound like the spectrum sounded. And this is where I started learning about audio, learning about frequencies and tones and like sine waves and lots of maths, and then found a website that explained it all and just kind of forgot all the sound stuff and just copied what I found in this website. But the website was World of Spectrum, and it's like a rabbit hole of history. It's got thousands of games that were produced for the Spectrum, just as audio formats, the screens from them, the images, documentation from those days, and also people had reverse engineered how all of this hardware worked. And I was able to actually read this reverse engineered documentation and work out how this old piece of kit works so I could try and replicate the sound properly. And that's one of the things I do love about the web, that there's so much like content out there. People are just falling over themselves to share their knowledge with completely random strangers. And I was able to make this quite horrible experience for you all because of the kindness of others. So in the sound, it turns out that the amplitude of the wave doesn't really matter. What matters is this the width of the wave. So this is this is referred to as a pulse. And in our samples, which I learned what samples were, but then didn't need to know it, so I've forgotten really what they mean. But samples, we need that number of samples for a pulse. And the sample value goes from -1 to 1, and that kind of line in the middle is 0. So where it crosses 0 and comes down again, that's one pulse, which is 855 T-states, obviously, right? A T-state is something that a single T-state is the amount of time it took the spectrum from the 80s to do one operation. So the spectrum ran at 3.5 megahertz, which means that if you do a bit of maths, you can work out that 855 T-states is 0.0002442-something-something seconds. Very, very small amount of time. And two of these pulses together would make a binary zero of the short pulses, and two of the long pulses together would give me a binary one. So if I could make a wave using JavaScript, then I could make the sound, because I could get the bytes from a website and turn it into sound. So I've got the numbers from the world of spectrum, so I know that the spectrum runs at 3.5 megahertz. My sample rate that I want to output out is 44 hertz. I have this function that multiplies the length of the sound, so 855 T-states, by the length of T, which is the T-state, multiplied by the sample rate, plus a half, just because. And then you just floor the value, and you get like a round number. So that kind of worked. So I was able to get the number of samples required to make a pulse for a 0 and a pulse for a 1. You're following all this, right? And then I populate it, and I get my waveform. So I'm going to have 11 minus 1s and 11 plus 1s, and that gives me a binary 0. So then I'm going to go off to the FFconf website. I'm going to grab the website using the fetch API. I'm going to get that data as a uint 8 array buffer. So I've just got the bytes, the raw bytes. Getting too fast here. I need to create a sound buffer that's big enough to play the bytes I just downloaded from the fetch. So that is the number of bytes multiplied by 8, because there's 8 bits in a byte. And then the bits we're going to multiply by 2, because we have two pulses per, we need two pulses for a bit, and then multiply by the one bit, the one length, because that's the longest. So we have a big enough sample buffer sample, and we get a buffer, and we just stuff data in there, and magic, it works. Okay? None of you are going to go home and try and do this, so don't worry about it if you can't follow it. Yeah, it's true, actually. So now I can, because I know what a 0 and a 1 sound like, I can take the FFconf website or any website and turn it into sound. So I'm going to mute this first. Well, no, there we go. So that is the first angle bracket. I think that's the D for the doc type. Oh. All right, you get the idea. So sound now works, okay? Cool. What about the loading bars? The loading bars that ran around the side of the screen, super important part of the experience of having a spectrum. The loading bars actually have a really, I think, interesting story to them. This is the, this is a screenshot, well, a screenshot, a photo, they didn't have screenshots back then, of the ZX80, and the chip inside the ZX80 had 8 pins, and they had one pin, well, because they had so few pins, they used one pin for the display, but they also used it to read all of the audio when they needed to read data. So every time they read data, it would just mess with the display. It would just, like, corrupt the display, as you see here. But engineers being engineers, they were like, that's a feature. We now know that the sound's working, see? Because we can see it on the screen. And actually, they could kind of see what the baud rate of the data was going into the spectrum. And in fact, the other machines, like the Amstrad and the Commodore and the other computers that were around that time, they copied that technique, put it in their software, and used it to show the user, the person using the computer, that the thing they were trying to load actually worked. So that's user experience from the early days. Okay, so I want to recreate these bars. Now, I can't just take all the bytes I got from the FFconf website and just kind of loop through them and render them on a canvas, because it would just go very, very fast, and we don't want fast, we want old and slow. So what I need to do is put the bytes through the audio, and as it's playing, take the sound and render that as a bar on the side. So noughts and ones represent different colors. So we've got a few options here on how to process sound in its kind of raw form. We have an analyzer node, which is what you'll see to render kind of spectrums, but not my spectrums, but the other spectrums, like the, you know, the bars. But that kind of filters out some of the data. It doesn't give me all the data. I need to get every single sample that you hear to be able to work out where those pulses begin and end. And then you have the script processor and the audio worklet. And the audio worklet is the recommended API. And in fact, script processor is marked as deprecated as of August 2014. And it's recommended that you use the audio worklet, which doesn't work in any browser. So we're going to use the one that's deprecated, because that's how the web works, right? So we make this script processor that has a read event. So it fires this read event with all the samples it has in the audio. And they're just values between -1 and 1. And I'm going to loop through all of those samples, trying to read the point, the kind of inflection points where the sample value goes from -1 to +1 and then back down again. And that gives me a pulse. And once I have one pulse, I get the other pulse. And if they're long, I get a 1. And if they're short, I get a 0. Kind of glossing over months of work, but still. Now, I did actually try and render this directly into the canvas without the sound to see kind of whether it would work. And I just happened to have DevTools open at the same time. And I thought, like, a whole page is turned into bits, not just bytes, is kind of hundreds of thousands of bits. And it probably takes a little bit of time to actually run. Because I had DevTools open at the same time. I ran a performance profile, and it just happened to tell me, line by line, how my code was performing. I figured, okay, yeah, it's going to take a little while, hundreds of thousands of bits. But it was taking like 3.5 seconds on that last line, the buffer.shift. And because I did have that open, I decided that 3.5 seconds seemed like a long time. And it kind of gave me a bit of an insight into how arrays work. It's an array shift is a mutation on the array, but there are other things that are mutating the arrays and not costing us much time. So anyway, I rewrote the code to get rid of the shift, and I got much better performance profile. I got it down to like 100 milliseconds, where it's spending most of its time just recreating a new array every time it was looping through all that data. But these are just regular old arrays. Old arrays, like, are so outdated now. I moved to typed arrays, and it completely flattened the performance profile. It did exactly the same job, but I used typed arrays instead of normal arrays. And it took the performance profile down to like 10 milliseconds, where it's spending most of the amount of time. And the way that I think about it, so this is not TypeScript. This is typed arrays in JavaScript. No transpiler or anything like that. The way I think about it is when you create a typed array, it has to be a fixed length. So it has to be exactly 10 items, and you can't get shorter or longer. So the operating system, the browser and the operating system say, OK, I need to reserve 10 X's in memory for you, and I need to know exactly where they are, because your typed array can only be one type. It has to be either a UInt8 or a float32. It can't be booleans and numbers and mix and kind of like a big. It's not allowed to be a kind of big party of types inside the array. So it means that it's very, very optimized and very fast, which kind of goes against going slow. But I need it to be fast so it could be slow later. And with that code where I'm kind of looping through each sample, I can now work out what's a 0 and a 1 when I hear it, or when my code hears it. So Let's have a look at what that looks and sounds like. So that's the pilot tone, which I'm faking. And these bars, these... So I think the blues are ones, I think. I can't remember which way around I did it. But the binary in the middle is just me kind of looking at the data. And the bars are being rendered based on the noughts and ones. It doesn't look exactly like a spectrum, but we're just going to say it's fine and it's okay. So that works. Cool. But what about all those terrible formats like GIFs and WebP and JPEG and animated GIFs? I don't want any of that. I want to create, like, take the old 1980s image formats and bring those back to life. We don't need any of that cool stuff. So I want to find those old formats of images and be able to render them on a screen. And the way that these images would render, I think, is really cute. It would load in this kind of like thirds, and then the color would pour down. This is sped up because otherwise it takes forever. And the file format for these images, it's exactly 6,196 bits long, so just under 6K, or just over 6K. And it's kind of broken into these four parts. And the first three parts are dedicated to 8 bit. A 1 bit is pixel on, and a 0 bit is pixel off. Very simple. Like, we can all draw that way. And the last section is the attribute data that controls the color. And they're held in kind of whole 8 bits. I think there's 96 of them, because I memorized it. This is a byte. So there's 8 colors in a spectrum, but because they had a bright flag, you could kind of get 15 out of that, because 8 times 2 is almost 15. Like, bright and dark black is just black. So it's 16 minus 1. Anyway, so we had the attribute data for what color the ink was. So I think the ink might have been the ones. We had attribute data for the paper, which is the zero, so the background. And we had a bright flag, which would make everything very bright, but it make the paper and the ink bright. And we had a blink flag, long before the blink element in HTML. So I was taking these raw file formats from World Spectrum, these 6K files, and I was just turning them into kind of raw byte data. So I'd actually look at the raw bytes. And the really nice thing that I managed to work out is that I could take that entire fixed typed array, and I could take any point, any index in that array, so I could take like 2015, and if I did a left shift, yeah? Right shift? Come on. Left or right? Right. Which way is that pointing? Right shift. Okay, thank you. You're listening. Good, that was a test. If you do a right shift 11 times, you work out exactly where it belongs in that quarter. And it's very fast because we're doing low-level mathematical operations on data. Types arrays, bit shifting, super fast, also super like hacksaw credit points there because I'm doing bit shifting. And this is some of the code to parse that original data. And you can see I've got a uint clamped array at the top. We don't use them very often. I got to use one. I did some more bit shifting, some bit multiplication, modulus, a bit more modulus, and an await at the bottom. So my code was full of like super, super extra points. It's almost the exact opposite of Charlie's talk. I think almost the exact opposite of Charlie's talk. But now that I've got it loaded with all this kind of super code, I can now take any image from the 80s and render them using my format.
Is that the 80s calling?
That might be. Where's my mouse cursor? Okay, so we got Dan Dare, which we saw loading earlier. RoboCop, which some people have heard of. Manic Miner. Anyone play Manic Miner? Yeah? Animating GIF, sort of. It's not GIF, but animation long before the web. Multiple Batmans. So, yeah. Cool. So we can make now, like, we can restore crap image formats. But what about all the pictures of the cats and dogs on the internet? We should fix that too. or I want to fix that too. I'm going to take all of these great images and just make them crap as well, so that everything is old and slow and low and ugly. So this kind of distinct aspect of the graphics on the spectrum was this attribute clash. And this is where in a block of an 8x8 pixel block, you could only have two colors. And this would cause the attribute clash. You can see kind of up in the top corner where the colors bleed. You can see it there, basically. So I had to work out a way of replicating this effect from original images. So the first part of it is taking an image, like a regular picture, and putting it into a canvas, and then I've got all the pixel data. So that, comparatively, is easy. Then I need to take the Atkinson's dither algorithm, use the 15 colors of the ZX spectrum, and apply that map, which is easy-ish if you know how to copy and paste as well as I do. And then I needed to determine what the ink and paper split was, which I didn't have a clue, so I basically just hacked it until it worked. And I end up with this. So here is a picture of a guy, and I have rendered it into the canvas. So I just stretched out, and I'm zooming in on an 8x8 pixel. And I would then apply the filter, so I get this, which isn't too bad, but the problem is, in this square that I'm looking at, you can see up in the corner, there's four colors there, and I need to get that down to two colors. So I needed to go through and find the most popular two colors, and they can't be, if you have white and gray, they're actually the same two colors, because white and gray is just bright white and not bright white, okay? So I go through, work out the most popular colors, create this nightmare mask, and then I end up with a compatible image format. And now I can take any image I want and make it awful. Okay, where's my mouse cursor? All right, how about we wire it all up? How about we take my phone, take a photo of all you, oldify the image, turn it into audio, and play it into the machine and render that as an old image using the latest technology. Seems kind of backward. So that's what I decided to try and do. Now, before I actually show you how that worked, or show you that working, hopefully, because this is when we go to the demos, I'm just going to quickly take a picture. Where is this plugged into? So, the first time I tried this, this isn't going to work, is it? Right, I need you to all pray silently to the demo gods, like, hard, because it might not work, that's why. I have a cable somewhere. I don't want to take anything out. No, you know what? I'm not even going to try and risk this. I'm just going to talk through this bit. Because I have some really scary technology over there. The first time I tried it, I played the audio, and I started listening to it on a computer, and I was just like, okay, listen to the audio and start rendering it. And I started seeing, visualizing kind of the bars, and it played, and then it started getting like really distorted, and the sound started kind of flattening out, and it all of a sudden would be completely silent. Like, it was playing, and I could hear it. It's giving me a headache, but there was no wave at all. The computer couldn't hear it. Now, it turns out computers are very clever. You know when you walk around on your phone and you're talking to people on them, and there's noise in the background? Your phone's microphone and the hardware on there is designed to get rid of the bad noise in the background. And I'm making bad noise in the background. So the computer's like, you don't want to hear that. I'll get rid of it for you. Like, oh, great. And luckily I found, I found a flag that was echo cancellation equals false, and it would get rid of the smart technology and basically go back to kind of old crap audio, and it worked. You done? Jeez. Okay, now, we have a choice here. I can either try and complete this demo with some software, or I can try and complete this demo with an original 1982 ZX Spectrum. So, should I plug my phone into the Spectrum and pretend to be a tape, or should I do it on my computer? Spectrum. I didn't really hear what you said, but I was going to do this one anyway. Okay, just forewarning, this worked every time at home, and not every time here. Right, I'm going to turn this back. I need to kind of wire a few things up here. So, can you switch over to the Spectrum for me, please? And I'll pull the sound out as well. Yep. I'm going to break your ears when I do that. Okay, so I'm going to plug this into the Spectrum as well. So you get to hear what we heard as children. Okay, so that's the Spectrum there. It doesn't look great from my angle, but I think you can see it. It says like 1982. Yep. Okay, so I need a phone. I need my phone. What do I need to do? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a photo using the browser. Like, the browser has a browse button for photo, and I'm just going to put a photo in there. And then I'm going to oldify it. Then I'm going to turn it into sound, and I'm going to get the Spectrum to try and load what I play. So I'm going to tell the Spectrum to load. Where is it? J. You get to hear these sounds. That's what we'd have to listen to. Okay, so that's now waiting for sound. I need to find the right end of my audio. I know I'm probably now eating into the time, but it's kind of my party, so sorry. Sorry, Tim, you're going to have to wait. Oh, where's my other end? There it is. Okay. Right. And it's really precarious. Like, the connections are really poor. Okay. Gray goes in the bottom. Okay, so I'm just going to take a photo of you all. Okay. Smile. Smile. No, you smile. There you go. Okay. Okay, so hopefully, let's turn the volume up on this. Oh. That's it, it's going. This is good, this looks good. That's fine as well. Yep, bytes image.screen. This is good. This will take a while, but it's looking good. We are going to have to wait like children from the 80s. And it, like, don't move my phone in case it, like... And the good thing is, I've written it so it sometimes bugs out and the data gets corrupted and you get, like, glitches where everything is green, which we could have, which I refer to as nightmare, more nightmare images. Can you imagine, as a kid, like, this is just a loading screen and it can go wrong anywhere in the next, like, half hour when you're waiting for... Right, colour's coming. You ready? Okay, you can switch to the other HDMI. Yeah, so why, there was actually a genuine reason. I grew up on Spectrums. I love that old machine. My brain just went straight into nostalgia when I first heard that sound again a few years ago. And honestly, I was trying to make that effect for the last year's website, and it took me about 12 months from the inception, not constant coding, like just dipping in and out, and trying over and over again. I can tell you that the sound has gotten better. Like, there was actually a worse version of that sound, and Julie wasn't kidding when my son actually went, "Oh, that sound again." No, but then I'm not like this. project didn't pay me anything. I didn't get paid for it. There's no tangible, like there really is no tangible benefit to having this thing. It cost me a Spectrum. Like I had to buy a Spectrum to be able to test it. So really for me at the time, it was just for the joy of making something. And the reason I gravitate towards JavaScript and the browser is that I didn't need any expensive technology to be able to make something. I can be creative using code with just a browser, and I mean, admittedly, like a £2,000 machine. But at the time, I had an old PC that was £50 from the market. And I love that I can just write code and for myself just to kind of be creative. So that's why I kind of tinker with code and play and have made this thing. So thanks for listening.